The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome, welcome, and good evening. It's nice to be here, to be with you all. We had a TBD on the calendar for quite some while. I wasn't sure who's it going to be. Who's going to be the mystery speaker? Turns out to be me. That wasn't the initial plan, but I'm happy to be here. So last week, Gil, Max Ernstein, and I finished teaching this 8-month-long course that we called the Equivalence of Ethics and Enlightenment, EEE, 3E. So 8 months, 15 homework assignments, you know, of reading, and the students were writing as well once a month, and getting in small groups, and you know, we gave them some prompts to talk about. And so you might think, like, ethics, oh my goodness, that sounds so boring. Why would anybody do that? That sounds tedious. It sounds, just not something necessarily one would want to spend so much effort and energy on. But it's turned out, I mean, it's not a huge surprise for us teachers, but even though I've taught that course before, a few times actually, that it's so rich. There's like something that's, even having taught it before, to really look at the role of ethics or the way, you know, and to broaden what does it mean to be ethical, and to broaden it to include just the way that we are in the world. So Monday being the last class, we spent a little time kind of reviewing some things, and I kind of combined a few different elements and kind of made up a little bit of a new way of thinking about the Dharma, this, and with having had this experience. Because, you know, we have this expression, the Dharma, and for those of us who taken refuge, quote unquote, we take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. But what does that mean, really? What is the Dharma, and what does it mean to take refuge in it? And is there a way that we could explore this question, that we could investigate by using the perspective of ethics, and I actually would say rather than ethics, harmlessness. This idea of not wanting to cause harm and not exploring what does it mean to not cause harm and what does it mean to cause harm. So this idea of Dharma, can we look at it, explore it, using this as a lens? So Dharma, of course, is one way we can understand it is as the teachings of the Buddha. So maybe like the doctrine or the words of the Buddha. This recognition that the Buddha and some of his senior followers, senior disciples, these wise, compassionate people that left instructions, that left teachings, so that others could find the same way that they have. So we can be inspired by them, so we can learn from them. And there certainly are lots of teachings, right? For those of you who have studied the suttas or the nikayas, you know that there's a whole lot of them in there. I myself kind of like enjoy reading them and looking at them and studying them. I, for myself, getting inspired. And here's one verse that's in the Dhammapada. Dhammapada, it's collection of verses. It's probably what's been translated the most. I think there's over 20 different translations available, translations into English, you know, let alone all the other languages. And you know what, Svetta? I feel like the volume is just a little bit low, so I feel like I want to strain my voice just a little bit to have it be a tiny bit tighter, louder. So if I'm just talking like this, can we have it just a tiny bit louder? Is maybe just a tiny bit more louder? So it's, oh, Is it okay for you guys? You want it to go up, or is that an okay sign, or a go higher sign? Okay, thank you. I felt like I was straining my voice just a little bit, trying to be a little bit louder. Okay, so in the Dhammapada, this collection of verses, there's some really wonderful and pithy little verses in there, and this one goes like this. Doing nothing malicious, engaging in what is skillful, and purifying one's mind, this is the teaching of the Buddhas. So kind of, you know, just a summary of all the Dharma, all the teachings is doing nothing malicious, engaging in what is skillful, and purifying one's mind. I kind of like this straightforward way, and it brings to mind, I don't know if it's exactly the same, but it brings to mind the path of practice as Sila Samadipanya. The path of practice is first doing nothing malicious, Sila, that is being ethical, not causing harm. The second, engaging in what is skillful, Samadhi. Samadhi is mental development and meditation, concentration, and certainly that's skillful. But we could also say skillful is ethics, so maybe does it not a perfect match? But the third verse in the Dhammapada, the third line is purifying one's mind. This could be also considered maybe part of wisdom. Is the contents of the mind or the way that the mind thinks. That could also, of course, be concentration or mental development. But I think what I'd like to highlight now is this first line, doing nothing malicious. Two other steps. This is the teachings of the Buddha. I remember when I was in graduate school studying Buddhism, I was in a class, and I was the only student who was a practitioner of Theravada. Everybody else was a Mahayana practitioner. You know, Mahayana is the later Buddhism. And the professor, now I don't remember what point he was trying to make, but he asked this question. Okay, so if you could you just use one word to describe the Dharma, the Buddha's teachings? And I thought, sure, it's easy. It's just harmlessness, like do no harm. That's, you know, three words, three monosyllabic words. This is really simple. Turns out it's not so simple, right? Because we had a classroom and every single person there in the classroom had a different idea. And the Mahayana people, some of them, I didn't even know what they were talking about. So even though that we might want to simplify, it doesn't mean that everybody would agree, but for me, this idea of do no harm, even if it's not, I don't know, the absolute fundamental, I think it's a fantastic provisional fundamental teaching or a way to be. Like, why not? Because do no harm, sometimes we think about doing no harm as like, you know, treating others with respect and not cutting them with knives or shooting them with bullets or something like this, but it's also about ourselves. And so much about this practice is we start to see the subtle ways in which we harm ourselves, the subtle ways in which the inner critic criticizes us, or the maybe subtle ways, and sometimes we abandon ourselves when difficulties, or maybe the way that we don't take care of ourselves, even though we it's good for us to eat well and sleep and exercise and meditate. You know, it doesn't mean we always are doing those things. And it's not because we're intentionally wanting to cause harm, but part of the practice is just recognizing or becoming sensitive to, oh yeah, this way isn't the way that leads to the greatest freedom, the greatest ease, the greatest peace. So there's another, in the suttas also, there's a way in which the Dharma is described. And it's described as, this is part of the teaching that the Buddha says, and it's when other people are describing the Buddha, they say, oh, he's one who teaches the Dharma that's beautiful in the beginning, beautiful in the middle, and beautiful in the end. I feel kind of inspired by this, that something that's beautiful through and through. And so we might think harmlessness too also has this beauty. I mean, this grace, something about it that, you know, that where we can be safe and others can be safe. And maybe there's something beautiful about that. So the Dharma as the doctrine kind of summarizes some of the teachings of the Buddha. And of course, one of the key teachings is the Four Noble Truths. Many people would say that this is the key teaching of the Buddha. And we can consider these as pragmatic perspectives that help us guide us in the world and understand the world and concerned with suffering and the end of suffering. And I know for me, the very first time I heard this was not when I was expecting it. It was in a yoga class. I had no interest in Buddhism. I didn't even really know what Buddhism was. But the yoga teacher said, turned out to also be a Dharma teacher. I didn't know that. That didn't mean anything to me at the time. This person had a lovely accent from Minnesota. And I just so have this warm-hearted feeling towards people. I have a really thick I can't mimic it, but a Minnesota accent. Acknowledging that there is suffering. And, well, all these years ago, sitting there on my yoga block, thinking like, oh, what a relief that somebody's actually talking about something real and not pretending that everything is okay or saying how things should be or aren't really. There's a cause for suffering. Things arise for a cause. They're not magical. And importantly, there's an ending of suffering, the third noble truth. And of course, the fourth noble truth is the Eightfold Path. There's a way leading to the ending of suffering. It did occur to me, what would it be like if there was not this fourth noble truth? Oh yeah, there's ending, but there's no way to get there. Like, it would just be very different, right? It would be this practice, this would be more just about faith or something. But maybe we could just boil all this down to, if you stop doing something that causes suffering, the suffering ends. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward. And so, of course, in the Four Noble Truths and in all these different ways in which we talk about suffering in this Buddhist tradition, this is a word that stands in for such a wide range, from just the acute physical suffering that humans can experience, the acute emotional suffering. Anybody who's ever had their heart broken knows this, or had a loved one die knows this kind of end of the spectrum. But also the other end of the spectrum, this feeling like there's something that's just not quite right. And I don't know what it is, but it just doesn't feel completely satisfying or doesn't feel quite right. So suffering is this, isn't a single word for this whole range. But what if we use this word harm instead of the word suffering? And if we considered the same thing, whereas suffering has the flavor of maybe of something we experience, and harm has more the flavor of something that gets done, either done to us or we do to others. But this same idea of tuning into the presence or the absence or what causes harm. In the same way that the Four Noble Truths are these pragmatic perspectives, of using the word harm instead of suffering, there is harm, there's a cause for harm, there's an ending of harm, and there's a path leading to the ending of harm. There's a way in which we might interact or engage with the Four Noble Truths and maybe a little bit different way. And acknowledging that harm so often is unintentional. Sometimes we think about it primarily as being intentional. You know, somebody is willfully harming others, but to think about kind of the unintentional highlights, some of the ways in which we harm ourselves that are not so easy to stop. These habits, these compulsions, these just simply not being present for what we are doing and recognizing that harm causes from that. And these habits and these compulsions and not being present can be an expression of the clinging or the craving, which can be a cause for suffering, of course, and a cause of harm for ourselves, partly because we're not present for what's happening, or we don't have the capacity when we're really clinging on tightly to stop the momentum of the mental habits, to stop the momentum of the emotional habits that cause harm. So to tune into and recognize the ways and that we might be causing ourselves harm, not because we want to give one more reason to beat ourselves up or to feel like we're failing or not doing it right, but just to recognize that sometimes when we recognize that when there's harm arising, there can be some compassion, there can be some tenderness, like, oh, yeah, this is dukkha. This is some harm is being caused by my holding on so tightly to a particular idea or a belief. Recently, I was at a group of people, and I showed up having this idea that, you know, okay, I have this particular role and I'm going to behave this particular way that's, you know, appropriate for that role. But I didn't realize that nobody else thought I should be in that role. And it's quite something, right? As long as I was hanging on to this idea of like, no, I'm the one that does this and you guys are the one that do that. And, you know, this is how it's supposed to go. But it just was a misunderstanding, but just this recognition, like, oh, just let go. Let go, Diana, of this idea that you had. And that just was really great. It was such an obvious way to see, like, how many times are people holding on to how we think we should be or what's expected from us? And then our environment and how other people behave doesn't necessarily match. And the suffering the harm that's caused. And of course, the Four Noble Truths have the Fourth Noble Truth as the Eightfold Path. And if we look at the Eightfold Path, we can see that four of the factors, half of them, have a concern with harm. The second one, right intention, includes with it non-ill will. That is, not causing harm, not having hostility and causing harm towards others. Right speech, right action, right livelihood, all three of them are associated with ethical behavior, which are, you know, one way in which we don't harm others. Maybe we could stretch it a little bit and say some of this right mindfulness and right concentration is a way in which to help us not cause harm, to let the mind and the body to settle down. So the Eightfold Path is a way in which we can consider as and through this lens as to help us not cause harm, intentionally or unintentionally. So one way we can understand the Dharma is as the teachings, and includes the Four Noble Truths, and includes that pithy little statement from the Dhammapada. But another way we can understand the Dharma is not just as some concept or some idea that's, you know, existing out there in the ether somewhere, just as language or thoughts, intangible. But the Dharma is also something, the way that we show up in the world, the way in which we interact with the world, through the way that we live. Because there's a way in which, with certain skills or intentions, the way that we are allows the Dharma to be expressed, allows the Dharma to have a role in our lives. So not only is the Dharma as a concept, but the way that we show up. And here's another quote from the Dhammapada. It goes like this: "Not by harming living beings is one a noble one. By being harmless to all living beings is one called a noble one." So to be harmless, the word here is ahimsa, of non-violence, so to, you know, not have any violence. To be acting with harmlessness is to be a noble one. That ties in with the Four Noble Truths. Maybe some of you know that there's a number of ways we can translate that expression that's often called the Four Noble Truths, but it could also be the Four Truths of the Noble Ones. The Pali allows for that translation as well. So the Noble Truths of the, or the Truths of the Noble Ones. And the Noble Ones are the ones who are harmless. Four Noble Truths can also be the Four Ennobling Truths. And there is something ennobling about being harmless. The uprightness, the steadiness, the clarity that's associated with not causing harm, right? The sensitivity. It's ennobling. But with our, as we practice the Dharma, with our spiritual maturity, if you will, our sensitivity to harm grows, it increases. And we begin to notice it in subtler and subtler manifestations. And we become more sensitive to that contraction, to that tightness, that a little bit of sense of something's not right here. When we're considering causing harm, or And certainly when harm is, when we harm ourselves or somebody else has harmed us as well. And in particularly that gets highlighted when, as our practice develops, we also become aware of the spaciousness, the ease, and the increased freedom that's available as possible. And so as we notice more spaciousness, we can notice like, oh, the contrast with the constriction that happens that's associated with harming. This constriction can be also felt, I'm kind of like a tightening, but it also can be felt kind of like as a disconnection from others, or maybe even like a disconnection from ourselves. And as our practice deepens, not only do we become more sensitive, but we also become more motivated. We start to see and experience and acknowledge what's possible. As we start to touch into some areas that have more peace or start to have greater understanding about ourselves or others, then we feel more motivated to not cause harm. As maybe the goodness that's inside of us, the goodness that's getting cultivated, that's getting tapped into with Dharma practice, has this opportunity to get expressed in the way that we are showing up in the world. So we can also understand the Dharma as something that arises with our interactions with the world and with the harmlessness, the way that we show up, not wanting to hurt or harm ourselves or others. Maybe a third way that we can understand Dharma is kind of as a natural law or as a truth or as the way things are. And part of the natural thing or the way things are or something that all humans experience, if not all beings, is a wish to be happy. A wish to have ease and peace and freedom. And certainly the Dharma is about this. And so this wish to be happy gets supported by one of the Buddha's teachings about the bliss of blamelessness, of not harming others. And this knowing that we haven't intentionally caused any harm gets expressed in this excerpt. In the Digha Nikaya, one accomplished in ethics sees no danger in any quarter with regards to their ethical behavior. So seeing no danger in any quarter, that means not in the north, not in the east, not into the west, or not into the south. So the way they're talking, just no danger anyway. Instead, they experience a blameless bliss that comes from maintaining this noble virtue. This feeling of safety of, okay, I haven't done anything wrong. And not only the safety, but the confidence that gives to somebody. To know that you don't have regrets, or if it comes forth that somebody was harmed or something unfortunate happened as a consequence of your actions or something you said or something you didn't do or didn't say. What a good feeling to know, like, oh, okay, that was certainly not my intentions. That was just, I wasn't aware, I didn't know, I misunderstood, whatever it might be. But this bliss of blamelessness kind of helps support the Dharma law of humans want to be happy. And also, there's a one more quote here from the Dhammapada. Goes like this. Always awake are the disciples of the Buddha, whose minds, day and night, delight in harmlessness. Again, this word is ahimsa. So somebody is talking about that the minds of those of the followers of the Buddha are delighting in harmlessness. This kind of uplift that can happen, that knows when we're not harming. So what's really important about this is this idea, you know, I'm talking about non-harming and the Dharma, reading quotes from the Nikayas, and it could be one way to interact with this, which to think like, okay, I have to never cause harm, and if I do, that means I'm a terrible person or something like this, right? It's so important that the manner in which we engage with these teachings be consistent with the teachings. It's not helpful for us to set up a impossible standard and to chastise and beat ourselves up when we don't meet it. That's not what the teachings are. The teachings are about being present for our life, being present for our experiences, having the intention, having the motivation to not cause harm. And when we discover that we have caused harm, we make amends, we do what's appropriate, and we go on to the next thing. We learn from it and we go on. Rather than carrying it around with us and beating ourselves up. That helps, that kind of carrying it around and ruminating and getting stuck with it. There's a way that kind of doesn't allow us to learn what we need to learn and move forward. Instead, there's a way in which we get stuck. If we turn it into a story about being a bad person or being inadequate or unable or something like this. But instead, this harmlessness, maybe another word we could say is goodwill, care, warmth, kindness. So can we have this for ourselves and for others? A key part of the Buddha's teachings, right, is this open-heartedness, this warmth, warm-heartedness. And certainly that's harmlessness. That's care. So can we have that for ourselves as well as for others? Can we have that for ourselves, and it's the way that we're practicing the Dharma? So no matter how we define the Dharma, it's whether it's the teachings, whether it's the way that we show up in the world, whether, or, you know, as getting expressed through humans in the world, or whether it's as kind of the natural laws, and one of them is that people, beings, want to be happy. I tried to express it in terms of harmlessness. Maybe it was a little bit of a stretch, but in some ways, how is it not? How is it not? As the Dharma is being in harmony, not in conflict with what is and with others. And in this way, we can take refuge in the Dharma, take refuge in not causing harm. And may our doing so be a support for not only our greater freedom, but for the freedom of all beings everywhere. Thank you.